There's a lot to learn from other people. And Carrie and I, you know, in our years in Japan and the Czech Republic, being outside of the United States, have had the same experience many of you have had when you've been put in foreign contexts with people that don't necessarily share our sense of normal and our sense of time about a new way of being, a new way of living, a new way of thinking about the world. There's a lot that we can learn from other people and a lot that we can learn from the worldwide church. And I'm remembering that today because sometimes we forget about the beauty of the worldwide church because we're overwhelmed with sometimes its ugliness. We live in the midst of scathing critiques of the church. A lot of progressive pastors that I know, and I noted this at Princeton Seminary, were very squeamish about celebrating World Communion Sunday. And they were squeamish for reasons that you could understand. They thought, this is exclusive, it's exclusionary. We're talking about the worldwide communion of the church. We're not talking about the communion of all peoples of goodwill, which are part of God's heart. And I was there for a while and was a little bit critical of World Communion Sunday for a long time. And I suppose it's kind of stylish in academic circles, and I think particularly in American academic circles, to maintain sort of a pessimism, if not an active repulsion, towards the church by noting its weaknesses. The church is said to stand for everything that's wrong in society. It's a bastion of patriarchy, homophobia, elitism, racism. It steals away human freedom, squelches inquiry. It survives via the power of social inertia. Don't we hear that all the time? It's simply dragging on. It imposes an impossible belief system on modern people, requiring them to assent to the existence of some personal, omniscient, omnipresent, at once loving and abusive Father God who shames his children into compliance and imposes impossible demands of perfection on people, creating all sorts of mental disorder. Nietzsche, in the 1800s, once said, "In Christianity, neither morality nor religion come in contact with reality at any point." Part of his famous critique of Christianity. James Joyce said, "In this century, there is no heresy and no philosophy which is so abhorrent to the church as a real human being." And both of these people, interestingly enough, Nietzsche and James Joyce, were raised in very strict religious households. Whew! And that's the world we live in. But something happened to me this week, and even during the course of this week, I had a conversation with a young person who, having become involved in progressive churches like ours, and having been very excited about these churches, was sort of rather brutally demoralized by a person who was busily castigating the church, insinuating to this budding, enthusiastic young person impressed by our gay pride flag outside the building that all their time spent in communities of faith was a colossal waste of time because the church had lost sight of Jesus and was nothing but a dying institution. So I spent some time listening and commiserating with this person, and I was reminded once again that supposedly liberal, let's think about what that word means etymologically, liberal, supposedly liberal, progressive, educated people can be just as fundamentalistic in their thinking as conservative fundamentalists. And what this uber critic really was saying to this hopeful, forward-thinking, enthusiastic young mind was, forget about it. The church no longer matters. It doesn't matter that you're part of a church. It's a losing battle, and the church's days are done. The church is dead. Spend your energy on something else that matters a little bit more. Now, I don't want to be judgmental of people who are at that place, because I remember a time in my own life when I was at that place and decided I was not going to go to church anymore. And maybe it's a function of being human that we run through that place at some point in our life, and I don't want to be judgmental about people who stay there for a long, long time. But I think it's a question worth taking up to us. Does it matter that we're church? Does it matter? Is there a difference between me putting a gay pride flag up on my individual house and us, as a church, putting a gay pride flag up on our building? Does it matter? Is it different? Does it matter that we, as part of a 1 million member United Church of Christ in America, say that Black Lives Matter? Or that GLBTQ people should be afforded the same rights and privileges in our society as everybody else, including the right to be married? Does it matter? Is there a difference between Jorge Mario Bergoglio of Buenos Aires, Argentina, issuing a personal manifesto stating that it is his conviction that we need to begin a conversation which includes everyone, since the environmental challenge we're undergoing and its human roots concerns and affect us all, the world requires a new universal solidarity? And Jorge Mario Bergoglio saying this as the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, which has 1.2 billion members worldwide. Is it different? Does it matter? Here are other questions that I tend to ask myself when I'm faced with this sort of situation. Is there such a thing as the church that Nietzsche and James Joyce object to so strongly? The, capital T, C, capital H. I was really powerfully influenced by a Baptist author named James McClendon when I was in seminary, and he has a quote that stuck with me all through my ministry, and his quote is this: "The so-called center of Christianity is a fundamentally contested notion." That is, as long as there is a church, there will be arguments about what it means to essentially be the church. That's the nature of the church, to have the argument about what it means to be the church. The church is just fundamentally a movement of diverse peoples with very diverse backgrounds from diverse places with diverse ideas that honor the witness and way of Jesus in ways that make sense to those individual people. And it reminds me a lot of the statement by Kosuke Koyama, the Japanese theologian, who said, I don't know anything about Christianity or Buddhism. All I know are Christians and Buddhists. Yes, there are conservative, evangelical, or orthodox fundamentalists wedded to a political rightist agenda in our country, but are they the church? There are also socialist Latin American-based communities. There are also pro-Chinese, three-self-patriotic movement Christian Union members in China. There are also Swedish and Norwegian proponents of a democratic socialist state church in Europe. There are all sorts of permutations of the church. In seminary, I realized that a lot of the Presbyterians in the world are Korean. I also realized that seminary in Europe, that there are German Baptist nuns. Baptist nuns? Who would guess? Is the church anti-gay? Ask the members of the Metropolitan Community Church. Or Christian UU people. Or members of the United Church of Christ. There are pro-women's rights Catholic sisters. There are Protestant feminist theologians that are part of the church. There are Christian Zen masters that are part of the church. There are Taoist Christian syncretic Nestorians that are part of the church and have been so since the 600s. There are Christians who refer to their belief in the sacred as not believing in the God. They believe that you have to kill the God to actually have any experience of the sacred, like Master Eckhart Tauler, Jacob Bain, the author of The Cloud of Unknowing, Julian of Norwich, John of the Cross, Paul Tillich, Teilhard de Chardin. Are they not the church? There are atheists or agnostics who don't call themselves Christian but are vital parts of our churches. Are they not the church? Is there the church?
Are we not the church?
And another thing that I'm always asking myself when I have conversations like this is, realistically, is the church going to go away anytime soon? 500 years from now, will there be no church? 1,000 years from now, will the church be gone? My guess is that Buddhism will not have disappeared 1,000 years from now. Islam will not have disappeared. Christianity, whatever it is, will not have disappeared. But they will look very different than they look now. Will it change? Yes. The whole complexion of it will change dramatically. And the question for us is, how will it change if all the people who are invested in marshaling the power and voice of the church for good decide it's a lost cause and ditch? I'm worried about that. And the odd thing about me is, myself, I'm a member of this church, which is sort of institutionally critical of the institutional church, right? But I am a product of the institutional church. I have to admit that. I would not be here today if it weren't for institutional denominations creating seminaries that invite inquiry. So because I was part of a denominational seminary and was exposed to a lot of different kinds of thought, I can be the kind of church that I am today because of the institutional church. So many people, so many of us have the same journey. We ourselves are products of the American institutional church with its colleges and seminaries. We're part of this argument that the church has with itself, this love-hate drama that continues to go on down through the ages. I, for one, am going to use a day like World Communion Sunday to be thankful that I'm part of a movement that is taking this church, whatever it is, forward in a good way. I'm going to be thankful because I think it matters that we who are part of this church are not simply hanging a gay pride flag out as part of a small group of 100 people in a small village in the middle of Ohio, but we're part of a denomination of 1 million members who can say to the church needs to change on this, and can speak with power and with voice. I'm thankful that we can be part of something like the Crop Walk that allows us to be connected in good and vital ways with people all around the world. I'm thankful that we have things like opportunities because of the institutional church, like Baptist Youth Camp, where Julie Reiswig can meet people from various other different churches and create something awesome because of the value of many different people coming together to work on an issue together, to create something new that wasn't there before. I'm thankful that we have Cup of Pride Sunday in the back and that we are not the only church in the Central Southeast Ohio Association of the UCC that's open and affirming, but that our own Andrew Hill has decided to take a lead role in bringing these churches together to create something that we can't create apart from ourselves. This church cannot get 100 or 150 people to the Gay Pride Parade to say, there's a voice for open, inclusive Christianity in this country. Together we can, with people like Andrew working on it. I'm thankful that Doris Jane and the Climate Justice Discernment Group thought that we're not just going to work on climate justice right here in this church. We're going to try to figure out a way to create an affinity group within the association to share ideas and resources with one another so that the 34 churches of the Central Southeast Ohio Association can be involved in local green justice activities together. That's part of the institutional church. It's not just what we can do and what we can give as well. It's also about what we can learn. If it wasn't for the institutional church, I wouldn't be taking D-Men courses right now and learning a lot about shame. My own shame. I'm doing a course on shame right now, thanks to the institutional church. Does it matter that we're church? Does it matter that this exists? Given the fact that there will be churches for hundreds of years to come, doesn't it matter that there are local churches like ours and denominations like the UCC? And that we can be a voice in this big, humongous movement of 2 billion people around the world to move it into something that it's going to be better for the future. We're part of this conversation too, and we play an important part. It's interesting to me that we're starting a reading of the Pope's encyclical letter today after church. And whenever I mention to this, to me it seems normal, but whenever I mention to this to other clergy colleagues, they get a kick out of the fact that the traditionally Baptist church is the only one reading the Pope's encyclical in Granville.
Does that not seem odd? But this is part of what it means to be church, that we're sharing resources with one another and learning and growing because we have the opportunity to do these things, to share these resources, to be in this together, to build power, to build voice in a way that we could not do by ourselves. We're making the church what it will be. And I would say to that young person who was a little bit demoralized earlier in the week, hang in there. You're part of the future. Don't give up. It's not a bad thing. Let's pray. God, we give thanks for this lanky, difficult institution called the church, but we remember that there's so much that we can learn from one another as we continue to focus on the love that we receive from you, made known to us in the peculiar story of Jesus Christ.